And welcome back. The long-running conflict between government forces in Colombia in Latin America and the FARC rebel group has displaced millions of citizens and left over a quarter million dead. Steve Potter talked to the Colombian artist whose exhibition of large black-and-white photographs is now on display at St. Louis University's Museum of Contemporary Religious Art. It's been described as an accumulation of suspended pain.
The exhibition is called Sidarios. Erica Dietis, welcome to St. Louis.
Gracias por having me in the show.
Terry Dempsey is the director of MOCR, and he joins us as well. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Steve. Good to be here.
This exhibition really consists of portraits of women, and they all have something in common.
They were witnesses of massacres. They were, in most of their cases, they were forced to witness how they killed their family members, how they killed and tortured the family members.
And it's not a typical portrait. It's not someone gazing in the camera and smiling. Often they're not making eye contact with the camera. They might be looking away. They have unusual expressions on their faces. How would you sort of describe that?
Well, my intention with this project was to capture that exact moment where the women are remembering that horrible moment that divided their lives into two parts. When you remember love and when you remember pain, you close your eyes. It's something that belongs to your intimate world. It's something that that deals with emotions and it's like that place that belongs only to you, to the person that is remembering. So that's why my intention was to try to portray something that it's unimaginable, because when you're forced to witness the massacre of your mother, when they tell you, when they're, you know, cutting her tongue, taking out her eyes, and the perpetrator keeps screaming at you, open your eyes because you have to see. That's exactly the question that I'm trying to raise with this series. You know, how do you survive that? How do we give an image? How do we even try to put into the language such horror? So the way that I decided to do that was to photograph the women while they were remembering that moment.
You're actually interviewing them.
Yes, and I am being accompanied by a sociologist who's highly trained to deal with grieving process with victims of armed conflicts. So the interview is guided by her. She knows, her name is Nadis Londoño. She knows exactly how to handle the sequence of emotions, the right questions that need to be asked, also the right words that need to close that interview, because you cannot leave them in that moment of pain. You know, you have to figure out how to walk with them through that journey. So that's why it was very important for me to have someone that was able to do that and had the professional tools to do that. And I'm photographing them while they are doing this interview with her. And I'm waiting for that exact moment where I know the family member that represents the love of their lives is present, when you can see that they are feeling also the presence of the perpetrator because he's right there. And when you can feel them watching at that moment. Mm-hmm. So it was like 2-3 hours interviews.
Really?
With each woman. And not too many photographs. I had to really wait for that moment. You know, I have to really make the camera the less invasive and make them feel that we were really paying attention to their story and not only capturing the image.
And for the most part, you know, their eyes aren't open, not looking at the camera. How does that affect you, Terry? How do you see these photographs?
As we were organizing the show, Erica was choosing, based on our site, the location of each one of these photographs. So if you were to go to another place, another sacred space where she has done this, the order would be different. And she did make a big change, because the one woman with the open eyes usually starts off the exhibition, but she has put her at the very end of our exhibition, and she can explain why.
Like Terry said, I really wait until I get to the space that I am. This is an installation, so each image occupies the space that corresponds and looks natural for that image to be within a space.
So they're arranged differently depending on the venue.
Yes, yes. And in this case, when the first time I walked in Mokra, I saw that for some reason this space evoked to me the opposite feeling, in the sense that it's a place that goes darker when you walk in. So I think that the most particular image is the one that it's the only woman that has the eyes open. When we did the interview with her, it was very intense because it's like she didn't really need to remember the violence. It was like she was still present in that violence.
The photographs are really presented in a unique way. First, they're very large, something like 6.5 feet tall.
Yes.
And then they are presented on silk panels and suspended in a certain way. Why did you choose to do it all that way?
When I did Sudarius, when I started the Sudarius project, I had already interviewed at least 150 victims directly. And one of the things that they always tell you is that after the encounter with violence, they are left alive, but they are not able to leave. So it's that ghostly, you know, like they are trapped in that ghostly space, in that empty space of being in between these two states. So my intention was to photograph, to create these images that look like a ghostly image. They need to be tangible. They needed for me to be tangible, but they needed to be ghostly. So that's why I decided to print it on silk. It also has to do with the relation between the shroud and the Veronica veil.
Because they're on silk and not in a frame, is there any movement in the pieces?
Yes, they move with the wind in each space.
And I know this has been shown often in churches, so Mokra is a good fit.
It is. It used to be a chapel for Jesuits studying for the priesthood. And we've retained all the side altars, except for two. We have the stained glass windows. But what's new about this, because in previous exhibitions, the stained glass windows let in too much light for the art on display, we had window shades over them. This is the first time in nearly 25 years that we've had those shades up. Mm. And they dialogue beautifully with these works. And one of the things you mentioned about the air currents, we have a lively air current in our space. And these photographs are almost alive. As you're looking at them, the woman with the open eyes, you can swear that she is swallowing because the photograph is moving. I looked at another woman last night. I went back over there by myself. And her face suddenly became three-dimensional as it billowed out at me. And you can see them from both sides. The images can be read on the backside, too. The silk is that sheer. And so you're always aware of these presences. In normal exhibition spaces with photography, you just line one photograph up after the other along a wall. But these are hanging from the ceiling in all different orders. And as Erica can say this better than I, she talked about the community of these people represented by these photographs.
Yes, I think the 20 images complement each other. They are like a group of images that are not meant to be apart. So the 20 images sort of tell the complete story of the different stages
of grief.
So
when you're standing at a certain point, you might see 10 sort of overlapping together.
Yes, right. That's what's really intriguing about this show. And I also have the direct intention that the audience is able to touch some of these images. Some of them are installed very close to the ground level, so people can actually walk through and sort of feel embraced by this pain.
Erica, you were born and raised in Colombia. You still live there.
Yes.
That turmoil has been going on in Colombia for over 50 years between the government and the FARC rebel group. What was it like growing up there and living through that? And I know you have some personal experience. Your father and your uncle were involved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the place I call home. So I grew up there, so everything sort of feels normal to you in a way. My father, he's a general of police. He's retired for a long time now. He was very important general during the Pablo Escobar years. So that violence that everyone was seeing happening in the news, it really affected us. You know, we were one of the families that were threatened. My father I mean, the chances that he was going to get killed were very high.
And that's something you thought about as a little girl?
Every day. You know, like, there was this particular moment where Pablo Escobar threatened all the police force. And there was even a joke that they did, you know, and they would say, kill a policeman, get a chicken. So it was, you know, like, that was the my father was highly threatened. Our family was in danger all the time. So, I mean, you always grow up thinking this might be the last time you see your father every day.
Have you been to Colombia?
I've not. I'd love to go.
But I also read that you said that while you expressed yourself that way and what it was like growing up around that, you also said in a way that all that violence and that fear seemed normal.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because it's I'm 38 years old. I'm 37. I'll be 38 soon. Colombia has been in an armed conflict for 52 years. So I basically grew up thinking that, I mean, you have no way of comparing another vital experience. That I grew up like that. And very fortunate, my father is okay. You know, like, he survived those years. But my uncle, my mother's brother, he got killed by the guerrillas. And we found out on the news. So that really affected, it had a very big impact, the representation of his violence with our grief process.
Well, you're an artist, but you're also an anthropologist. So there must be a reason for that. And what was your thesis on?
My thesis was about this story that I just told you. Mm-hmm. I decided that I was going to have as a main subject study the way that the representation of violence can affect the grieving process. And that was exactly because of that moment that we turned on the TV and we saw as breaking news. It was the photograph of my uncle and the newsman, I don't know how you call it, the journalist was saying, you know, Jose Alejandro Gutierrez just got killed. He was killed by hitmen. There were like a lot of bullets, and my mother recognized his photograph and the images that they were showing live of the car with the blood, and my father recognized his hat, and she started screaming, and it was all this chaos surrounded, created by a way in an image, because we turned on the TV and there he was. And so my thesis was about how we are surrounded by this terrible news all the time, but they are just floating around you mm-hmm. until they hit you.
Did you become an anthropologist to help yourself work through what you and your family had lived through?
I don't think I did that as a conscious decision. But I think subconsciously, I always try to find answers to that particular moment, yes.
Terry, talk about the emotions you feel when you look at Erica's work.
I think for myself, it's a very private experience to go through this exhibition because you have these faces at your level, then they're above you, then they're behind you, and you can turn around and see them. You feel basically surrounded and embraced by women who have experienced things that I have never seen. But they have the ability, through empathy, you get involved with these works, as I said. And the fact that there are air currents going through and essentially making these living photographs. I've never seen any other photographs like this. They seem to be living and breathing. And they invite you to be with them, to understand what they've gone through. Now, we're only the third place in the United States to show this. This has been shown throughout South America and in Europe and in Australia, but we're fortunate to be able to bring this to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Erica, were you a little numb to their stories because you'd been through it, or were parts of their stories shocking to you or troublesome to you?
You know, I think it is impossible to be numb to these stories. I know there's like this common belief, you know, like once you have heard five stories, you sort of build like a shell around you. I think it is the opposite. You know, I think every time I hear a story, it's like they're peeling off one layer of the shields that we build so that we don't know what goes on in the world. So it's really the opposite. You know, I really feel that each story sort of, it's intense.
What you're feeling about how this experience was for your subjects, being interviewed and photographed and sharing these very deep emotions, how did it affect them?
I met with them 1 month ago. They saw the show a couple of years ago when it was in Medellin. It was the first time when they had seen the images. And then we met 1 month ago so that I would show them the book and I would show them everything that was going on with their images. And it was incredible to see their reaction. One of them said, I'm very proud of myself because I was able to bear witness of what happened to me. And I know I represent a big portion of Colombia. So they really have the sense of being honored in these shows because they travel, you know, there are images that serve as a witnesses of the country, the pain of the country. You know, it's not like they know they are not representing only themselves. You know, each woman, when we met, some of them I knew from a previous body of work that I've done, and they know the importance of telling the story, and they want someone else to be able to tell the story, so that's why they give me their testimony.
Well, coming up on October the 2nd, there's a nationwide vote in Colombia that could sort of change the dynamics of all this. What's that about exactly?
Well, the past 25th of August, the government and the guerrilla, the FARC, announced that they had the final text for the peace treaty. There was a ceasefire, and this peace treaty is going to be signed on September 26th. And October 2nd, it would be the referendum so that Colombians can vote to say yes to this peace treaty or no. So it definitely, it's a very important and unique time in our history.
A somber experience, Terry?
It is, Steve, in many ways, but it is a very human experience, especially in today's world. These images are of women in Colombia, but they could be images of women throughout the world, including our own communities. And that sense of being able to empathize with somebody else's suffering, I think, makes us more aware of just the fragility of life and the need to help protect it.
Erica, this work, your work, this particular exhibition has been described as an accumulation of suspended pain. What do you hope or think the experience is for people that will see this?
I think it's exactly, I'm going to borrow Father Dempsey's words. I think the intention with all my bodies of work is that people feel empathy, is sort of understand that the best way of honoring your own pain is to recognize others' pain.
That was Colombian photographer Erica Diatis and MOCRA director Terry Dempsey speaking with Steve Potter. Diatis' exhibition, Sudarios, is now on display at the Museum of Contemporary Religious Art at the St. Louis University campus and will continue through December 4th. You can find more details at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Christopher Herbert about his new book, Angels of Detroit, and the parallels between the city of St. Louis and Detroit. We'll also hear from a space researcher about his work with the 100-year Starship Project to help advance the first human mission to a nearby star system. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.